machine. And also, I should not have to ask Apple for fucking permission about anything at all. So we're going to set up this machine. I'm going to enter my username. I'm going to give it a big, quick password here. I don't need to enter the name. Somebody's watching me. Do more end-to-end problem solving, to do more end-to-end open source, not to accept that there are parts of our stacks, whether it's the computer or the server or the framework, where we can't just change shit if we want to change it. We should be able to change everything. We should own everything because we want end-to-end freedom. We don't want people telling us what to do. I don't want people telling us what to do. I certainly don't want Apple telling me what to do. Or what I can do, or where I can be, or what I can distribute. Fuck Apple. I want libertas, I want proprietas, I want pietas. I want freedom, ownership, and duty. And what you do with those virtues, well, that's up to you, isn't it? Thank you so much.
Everybody.
No privacy.
Oh man, it feels good to be back at my desk, in my studio, which is just my office desk. One day I might actually build out like a really cool studio with a cool background, maybe do some live stream podcast stuff. I don't know. That'd be kind of cool. Don't exactly know how I would do that just yet, but you know, maybe that would be kind of neat. So how is everyone doing out there? I hope you've been well. I appreciate a lot of the well wishes, emails, direct messages, checking in on me. Some people asking, hey, when's the next episode going to drop? And I actually did record this episode a couple of times previously and was actually in the process of uploading it, and I was like listening to it, and I didn't really like the tone, and I think a lot of my frustration and anger things recently were kind of coming out, and I decided to just not post them. And I did mention that in the group chat, in our Matrix chat to some people, and that was just more of a personal decision. There are sometimes I just record it, and I'm like, yeah, I don't really think that's a great episode. So I will just omit it and re-record it later. And I've been traveling a lot. Work's been busy, which is a good thing, but it means I've been out of town. And I've been keeping up on things and keeping tabs on things and updating my notes along the way. But there's so much going on. It's also, a lot of it does relate to the content that I and things I talk about on the podcast. Some of it's more geopolitical. Certainly, a lot of it does impact people's ability to communicate, speak freely, and with the rollout of a lot of this like new big tech software, it's becoming more prevalent to me that it's really kind of like the time to decide what path you want to go down and how much you want to be associated, how much of your identity you want associated to your online activities, your mobile device, your computer's operating systems, and things of that nature. In those opening clips where by David Hennemeyer Hansen, DHH Online, who is the creator of Ruby on Rails, also a lot of, I believe it's CEO for 37 Signals, which has been around for, gosh, probably 20 years or so, creating software, web tools like Basecamp and HiRise. I actually used Basecamp and HiRise back in like 2010, 11, 12 timeframes, which is basically software for customer relation management tools, project management, kind of geared towards, you know, web dev, software development, or really any company like those tools. But DHH has been a longtime Mac OS user and has basically put together his own Linux distribution based on Arch and Hyperlan with a set of packages of software and web apps that basically mimic that of the Mac OS operating system in a lot of ways. And the workflow, and it's very short key or hotkey driven, keyboard driven, less mouse, more keyboard kind of thing. And I've been using it for about a month and a half now, and I just absolutely love it. It's no secret that if you've listened to previous episodes where I talk about Linux, that Arch Linux is one of my favorite distributions that I just kind of always come back to, even if I try other different distributions with desktop environments and things of that nature. And there's a lot of good ones out there, but I always come back to Arch. It feels like an old pair of broken in shoes or Birkenstocks or something that, you know, just you can put them on and be comfortable and you don't really have to, you know, think about it. You just kind of have a lot of muscle memory for it, for that software. And so he recently was the keynote, or he was the opening keynote at the Rails World 2025 conference that was just a few weeks ago. And I've really kind of enjoyed his philosophy towards computing and digital sovereignty. And that's kind of what that's funny, because I actually had this episode put together for quite some time. And the title I actually put for this title was, "I Don't Need Permission, You Can Just Do Things," is the title of this. And his talk really kind of made me feel like, wow, yeah, that really, I am really kind of on the right track with things, or at least from what I'm seeing. And there's been a lot of proliferation of usage of Linux within the gaming community, huge YouTube personalities that have millions of followers are talking about moving to Linux, even some moving to things like Graphene OS or de-Googling phones and kind of getting away from that whole big tech stranglehold that everyone feels like they have over them, especially with all these new rollouts of artificial intelligence, whether it's like Google Gemini or Apple Intelligence. It's on by default. This is all on device scanning. And it's sold as and marketing as a tool to help you and assist you with your life. But I never really wanted that. And I think a lot of people never really asked for that. And we're seeing a lot of backlash, even just in the recent weeks and months with Windows 11 and Windows Recall and just this kind of like, it feels like adware. You're just running like adware all the time, like all these ads and tracking and trying to get you to divert your attention away from the task at hand in front of you. And Mac OS isn't quite that bad as Microsoft when it comes to the adware. They do inject ads into the Apple App Store and news feeds and some of their own apps, like the podcast app. If you use that, they're promoting things. But within the operating system, I would say that Mac OS is a lot better at the surface level with the whole limited ad injection. Now, it doesn't mean they're not tracking things. They certainly are. And it's definitely a lock-in ecosystem. Like, they are really trying to lock you into using their cloud services. Your contacts are there. Your communications apps like iMessage and all that are there. And they're really good at actually bringing all that in to make it very extensible, which is why I've always used Apple computers and devices in my professional work environment. I have over the years compartmentalized my life to where my personal devices, what I do personally for my life, is on Linux, but I still use Macs for work. And one of my hopes is that I can eventually mimic a lot of what I do on Mac on Linux-based operating systems, primarily maybe using Omarchi. And Omarchi is the name of the Linux distribution that DHH has released. And it's on GitHub, and you can download an ISO, and it's actually very easy to install. I've actually installed it on multiple machines, because I'm also kind of like, how compatible is this? I have a 2015 Intel MacBook Pro installed flawlessly, works great, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, speakers, everything works great. I have it running on my big desktop. I have it running on my ThinkPad. My primary personal device is a X1 Carbon ThinkPad. I think the current one I have is a 12th gen. I also have a 9th gen that I'm running Cubes OS on. So why am I talking about all this? It's because it's just like I feel like there is a movement towards kind of like, okay, enough is enough. What are my options? And for a long time, it's been kind of more, I would say more optional, pre-AI, recall and all that kind of stuff. And Microsoft is sunsetting Windows 10, I think at the end of October. By the way, today is Monday, September 29th, 2025, date of recording. So that's coming up here in the next, month where it's sunsetting support. Now, there will be support, obviously, for corporations and things, but you'll have to pay money for those security updates and things of that nature. But ultimately, they're trying to move everyone towards Windows 11, which also creates a new problem because a lot of people's computers are not compatible to install or run Windows 11 due to TPM or their hardware compatibility isn't in line with what Microsoft is requiring to run Windows 11. So I think that's also getting a lot of people to look at like, well, what do I do with this computer? And the most logical step is to move to maybe trying out Linux. And the gaming community has really been embracing Linux as well. There's been some big momentum with Valve using Arch Linux as the base operating system for SteamOS, which runs on the Steam Deck. I'm actually currently running SteamOS on my ROG Ally X, which is a handheld gaming device I use when I'm traveling a lot. And it's been working great. I actually love it. It's kind of a great platform for gaming on. I think it will continue to get better, and I think it's like all these things are really good for making people aware that there are other options. Just like we have, GrapheneOS on the mobile phone as an alternative to running like iOS or stock Android. There's been some challenges there within GrapheneOS that I'll be talking about within this episode that hopefully they can overcome, as well as some legislation that's been in the works and newly proposed as it relates to like different kinds of online safety acts or age verification here in the US as well as in the EU, Sri Lanka, Australia. Of course, there's things happening around the world. I can't report on all of it. I'm sure if you're fairly in tune to news or listening to podcasts, you're probably aware of the protests like in Nepal and the UK and people kind of hitting boiling points. We've had some political violence here in the United States in the last month with the whole Charlie Kirk assassination. And I think people are just kind of like trying to find a reason for things. And I'll tell you right now, I don't know the answers to it all. I am just like a lot of you. I'm just trying to live my life and care for those around me. And I'm also looking at my life in the digital aspect, which is probably why you're listening to this podcast or podcasts like this or watching content that has to do with privacy and security, digital sovereignty. How can I own my data? How can I be the one in charge rather than being left to a big tech oligarch telling me how I can use my devices or how I'm supposed to interact and engage with others online? What applications, what are the default browsers, iMessage and Google Messages and all these different things, or whether it's the traditional social media platforms. What does digital ID mean, right? How is that going to be utilized in the future to knowing for sure that this account came from this device and now what you say is illegal and you can be arrested for it kind of a thing like we're seeing in the UK. Like, this is mind-blowing. And we've got flock cameras being deployed and license plate readers being deployed at scale where basically every movement in every interaction, communication, transaction is being logged, stored, and maybe used down the road for something. Maybe, you know, you're a fairly boring person and you think, well, I don't really have anything to worry about. I don't do anything bad. But like, you know, the things that you do every day may become the subject, or maybe your association with somebody else who's caught up in some political drama online or protesting or whatever might put you into the crosshairs of an investigation or just broader surveillance. It seems like it's becoming easier than ever to be potentially caught up in that by just 1 or 2 degrees of separation from something. And that's really what all this is about. That's what drives and motivates me to continue to learn, experiment, figure out what works, what doesn't work in my life. And my life is probably a little bit more complicated than most because I have a business. I'm separating my business from my personal life, or I'm trying to as much as possible by compartmentalizing on different devices. I understand that's not exactly everyone is able to do that. That's just the situation I'm in. So that's what I'm constantly balancing is, okay, well, I do these things for work on these machines, and I need to be able to interact and communicate with employees or vendors and clients. And I have to, there's a certain level of like acceptability there where I'm like, okay, I'll use these different software stacks or close source software as it pertains to like video editing and collaboration tools and things of that nature. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. But on the personal side, what can I do to reduce my exposure, my liability to data breaches, to hacking attempts? I shared on the previous episode how I received a couple phone calls. Someone was trying to social engineer me into literally giving up one of my Gmail accounts, multi-factor authentication. And I'm very aware of these things, and yet they still kind of catch me off guard. And I'm thinking to myself, is this real? So a little bit of talking about what's going on there. GrapheneOS, a little update, global online safety initiatives that are current or proposed. I'm going to cover some of that. Some open source applications that I found very handy for Android devices, and some self-hosting journey, if I can get to all of that. So kind of also just a check-in. It's been a while since I was able to get a podcast episode out. I should be in town, hopefully through the holidays. So I'll probably have one trip in between. That shouldn't be that big of a deal. But the last couple months has been kind of nutty. So my apologies for being a little behind. And also, I was actually expecting to have this episode out a while ago and recorded twice and decided against it. So I would have been further along in my topics and things. But, you know, sometimes it just, you know, just doesn't feel right to put it out there. And so I just held back. And I think maybe I just need to kind of take some time and reflect on like, okay, let me get a little more focused on what I want to say and not just kind of have these rant episodes. I don't mind the rant episodes. I think they're kind of fun sometimes, but I just didn't feel like it was right in the moment. So I just didn't post them, and I'm just recording fresh. So I hope you're all doing well. I want to say thank you to those who support the podcast through Patreon and Lightning donations. So Michael Bates, David, Daniel J. Martin, TK, David, Mr. Milk Mustache, Hutch, Bon, I gotta lean in a little bit. My glasses are, I think I need some new prescription soon. I definitely know I need a new prescription soon. So some alphabet characters, Based Potato, Turquoise Panda, Wartime, Grounded Grid. Thank you all very much. Super appreciated. And I feel quite guilty because I feel like the value for value has been more lopsided in from you all and not so much from me. And I am planning to fix that. So thank you for your ongoing support. It's much appreciated. Thank you to our moderators, Unintelligent 7, Maddest Max, keeping everyone calm, cool, and collected. Cool like the other side of the pillow in the Matrix chat and other group chats. So we are on Matrix. We have a couple of chat rooms there. If you set up an account with Element, you can find all the links on the website. It's closednetwork.io. And you can get, you know, join the main group chat. You can join our off topic, which is basically our meme dump and just kind of random banter, as well as we have a SimpleX group chat that I haven't been active in, and also a Signal group chat, which I also haven't been as active in. I've been out of pocket for over 2 weeks. I've been home for 48 hours in the last 2.5 weeks. So I'm catching up, but I'm here and I'm still kicking, still experimenting. And yeah, I have some plans as well for changing some of our feeds. I'm switching over to Yellow Ball, which is a feed service that Josh, aka Side of Burritos, is set up and running. And I'm going to move over to him. Currently, my feeds are managed through Anchor, which is now Spotify. And I'm not a Spotify fan. I'm not a big fan of what they do with their money. Not a big fan of how they screw over creatives and inject a bunch of AI slot music. Just not a fan of that. Daniel Ek, the CEO, decides to do things with his money, and that's his money. I guess he can do what he wants, but I can opt out of supporting it. So I canceled my Spotify subscription actually quite a while ago. It's probably been like 3 or 4 months, and I kind of get into that a little bit too. But I also my podcast feeds are hosted there, and so I'm moving. In the process of moving all of that over, starting probably the next episode, will all be hosted through Yellow Ball. And I'm also looking at moving the website over to Ghost CMS instead of WordPress, and potentially move Patreon over to that as well for direct support, which would actually be a little bit more private for subscribers that choose to do that, and as opposed to doing it through Patreon. And it would also allow me to have like the podcast feeds and articles that I've been wanting to do, as well as the newsletter. Yes, I have a newsletter that I've never actually sent out, and a lot of you are subscribed to it. I'm planning to actually start using that as a tool, right now it's set up with MailChimp, and I don't really love that. It's just been it was an easy way, and it was free for me to like kind of easily start curating my mailing list. And the only purpose of the mailing list is to only email out information that is pertinent to the topics and subjects that we discuss on the show, and not for any other purposes. No monetization, no selling, just another way for me to communicate with everyone that wants that information. So I think I'm going to set that up through Ghost as well. At least that's my plan. And that will allow me to also have a higher frequency of touch point where there might be topics that are kind of like breaking, or maybe legislation or bills that are being proposed or voted on. Like, I'll give you an example. There is a bill, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but there is a bill coming up to vote on, I believe, in the EU in the next couple of weeks. Let me see if I can find it in my notes really quickly. I think it is the... Oh, yes, here it is. It's the EU Chat Control CSAM Scanning Mandates. There's a vote scheduled on October 14th, 2025. So things of like that, where I may not have a podcast episode coming out with like in that timeline, but maybe I could get a newsletter out to kind of let everyone know what's going on, especially for the EU listeners, because it's just an easier medium to get that information out. So I'm going to be getting into some of those global online safety initiatives here in just a minute, but I did want to touch on my travels and face scanning within the US, as well as kind of like, you know, just the way the conditioning that I see people feel like they don't have options, and when you do, and in traveling, you know, going through the security lines where they're checking your bags and scanning them and all that, they have all these facial scanners, at least in the U.S. airports, and they are an opt out of. You can opt out of these things, but they have like a very small sign at the security gate. And they don't tell you, they don't ask you to opt in. They just say, hey, come on up, you know, I'm going to scan you real quick. And they don't really say anything else. Like, they're doing a facial scan on you, and you slide your ID into this little machine, and then they tell you you can go. And I'll tell you like what they're scanning it for, how long they're retaining this information, where it's going, nothing. It's like you're being conditioned to just don't ask questions and follow the person in front of you. Now, I go up and you can just opt out and you just hand them your driver's license. They hold it up to your face. They look at you and they're like, okay, cool. You know, it's just the whole, my whole point is I've mentioned this in previous episodes where you go to the grocery store or you go to GameStop, you go to buy something and it's immediately like phone number. Can I get your phone? What's your phone number? It's like, well, I don't want to give you my phone number. I just want to buy this item and leave. Yeah, well, we won't know if there's something wrong or you have to return it. You know, it's just this attitude of you're the problem because you don't want to give them all your information. It's like, I'll have a receipt that has the proof of purchase. It'll be fine. If there's a problem, I can exchange it, right? With a receipt. Well, yeah, it's just easier with your phone number. It's like, no, I don't. It's easier for you to market me once I leave, but this doesn't make it easier for me. You know, and that's the whole thing, right?
Step up to the thing, stick up to the line, get your face scanned.
You know, it's like, why? No, I choose not to do that. And I think that's kind of the ethos of like what I heard from David DHH from this Rails conference in his desire to break away from Mac OS for Ruby development and for development of software and everything else. Now, I am not a developer, right? I mean, I know some scripting and stuff, but I am no means a developer. I've dabbled with some Perl. I've, you know, done a lot of PHP development, which is more website, you know, focused, but I don't know Go. I don't barely know Perl. I know enough to just do some scripts for things that I want, sifting through files within directories and grepping information using sed and awk. But like, I'm not a developer. So most of the time when I see individuals who are setting up their machines with Linux for development, it doesn't really speak to me because they're setting up like VS Code or Vim, NeoVim environments and stuff. And that's all cool. I understand all that. But I work more on the creative side, right? Where I'm doing video editing, I have photo editing, I'm working within Adobe Tools, which I'm trying to migrate more to Figma. I'm also trying to migrate from Final Cut Pro over to DaVinci Resolve, which will hopefully be something I can do down the road professionally. So a lot of my experimentation is to see if I know I can make stuff work for my personal stuff, but can I also have a plan, a roadmap to move my work environment off of, say, Mac OS and over to something that's I can standardize on? I don't want to run three different distributions between my personal and work computers. I want to run the same release across all my machines and try to synchronize as much as I can. And I know there are some of you out there going, oh, Simon, yeah, I already got that. It's called NixOS. And I kind of agree. I get that. I think that would probably be a viable option. I'm an Arch guy. At the end of the day, it's my comfortable pair of broken-in Birkenstocks that I can just know I can put on, and I don't have to really think about my package manager or how I'm going to configure stuff. And I think there's a lot of merit to the NixOS users, and I'm actually in the real world. I have like this technology group of friends that I've met, and a lot of them run either Nix or BSD, ironically. Not right, really ironically, just different from Linux, right? But DHH basically assembled a really nice environment that mimics that of Mac OS, because that's where he came from, was using Mac OS. And it's called Omarchy, Omarchy. And it uses Hyperlan, but it has a lot of stuff configured right out of the gate. And it's omarchy.org, by the way. A beautiful, modern, and opinionated Linux by DHH. The cool thing is, they actually have an ISO you can just download. So it originally was a script that you would run after you had a fresh minimal installation of Arch. You don't even have to do that anymore. You can just download the ISO and use your favorite image burner like Bolina's Etcher or Rufus, or just DD it from a command line and install it. Now, there's not a lot of configuration on the installation. It is just prepackaged. It is a very opinionated distribution by DHH. And for me, it's been awesome. I love it. I've been running it on my ThinkPad, been running it on a 2015 Intel MacBook Pro, been running it on my primary desktop machine. I love it. I absolutely love it. It's working out great for me. It doesn't mean it will work great for everyone, but I'm hoping that this could be what I've kind of secretly been wanting for a long time, which is a very stable, snapshotted environment that I can synchronize across multiple workstations. And when I say synchronize, I kind of mean more like not necessarily synchronize all the configs, but I'm kind of running the same thing across all of them. And I'm very like, I move from one machine to the other and it's like, I don't have to think about it. It's just muscle memory. That's what I'm looking for. And this is kind of working for me a lot. And I'm not trying to be a big advocate for it. I've been really excited with it. I've been using it on my laptop as I'm traveling, and I just really like it. I've kind of changed my workflow to, instead of like things windowed and having multiple monitors, to using multiple workspaces and having dedicated applications within those workspaces where they always live. So for instance, like on the first screen or the first workspace, I generally would have my email up, and then one chat window, and then usually a terminal. And then on workspace two, I have Signal and Signal Beta set up because I have two different Signal accounts. Oftentimes I'll have Element up in there as well. So it's kind of split into three windows. And then I have the third one, which is my browser, and usually just the browser. And then five and six, I generally have, sometimes with the browser, I also have my password manager up in there. And then I just generally have some creative tools on five and six workspaces. Sometimes it's Figma, sometimes it's Canva, sometimes it might be a video editor that I'm experimenting with, or Darktable or something like that. So I'm trying to kind of mimic and emulate my workflow on macOS on Omarchi for work. On the personal side, it's great. I love it. But then again, I've also been using Arch for a long time, so I'm fairly comfortable with that anyways. But now I'm trying to really use web apps instead of browsers. So that's really cool. Also, I've been trying to use a dedicated Pixel with Graphene OS for my work phone replacement. It worked for about a week, and then there were some things that broke with Google Messages and RCS. Now, on the personal side, that's not the end of the world, but on my work phone, it's a big deal when I'm working with vendors and clients, employees and stuff, and I have group messages. We also use text. They're on iMessage. Text is a way to kind of like, we don't use Teams. We have Slack, but we kind of just use group messages. And a lot of times we're screenshotting a thumbnail of something or uploading a clip of something, and not having RCS / iMessage has been a kind of a deal breaker on my work device for those workflows. And I need to work around everybody else. I can't expect other people to like use different communication tools just because I'm having a problem with my side. So I did roll back a week and a half ago to my iPhone until we can kind of maybe get that sorted. This is a big problem that's been reported within the Graphene OS forums where RCS just kind of broke. Now, it's not necessarily a Graphene OS caused issue. From the way I understand it, there have been some big changes with the way RCS is supported through Google and carrier services. So Graphene OS is actively working. They actually put out an update today, which I tested to see if it would work. I'm getting a different error 3200. My son's getting like 3204, we're getting some different errors. At least it's different than before, because before, after it stopped working, RCS status would just say connecting, and it would never actually connect. A lot of you listening to this may not actually care, but these are things, this is like a feature that a lot of people do care about and would rely on, and is a deal breaker in a lot of ways, because we do live in a world of 2025 where if you're using these devices and tools for like work related stuff, it can kind of cause some problems. And you know, they're not problems for everyone else. They're just a problem for you if you're trying to use GrapheneOS and trying to use Google Messages with RCS. So for me, again, I have multiple devices. I'm a kind of experimenting mode and that kind of thing. So I can kind of flip back and forth. It's a quick eSIM change back to the other phone. No big deal. Now, granted, this is my work environment. This is my professional environment. So I also don't like to mess with this too much because this is my livelihood. Now, my personal side, GrapheneOS is fine. It's been working great. I'm using Omarchi. And life is great. Life is great over there. And I'm also experimenting with some more, expanding some of my self-hosting services using virtual machines, and Docker containers within those virtual machines. And so I'm going to be talking a little bit more of that in other episodes down the road as I get more familiar and comfortable running, those environments. So up until now, I've been doing most of that hosting either on dedicated hardware, like with Ubuntu server running and using Docker, or using Docker managers like Portainer, Umbral, Casa OS, I've mentioned in the past, as well as Start OS, which I have a Start 9 server, which runs Nextcloud and Nostr Relay and some Bitcoin stuff on there. So, and also a SimpleX relay, or server, I should say, that runs over Tor. So I'm kind of experimenting with a lot, but I mean, ultimately, what my goal is to get out of those ecosystems before AI completely takes over. And I feel like we're getting closer and closer to that, where it was kind of an opt-in, and then with recent updates with Android 16 and iOS 18.7, I think, or 18.4, 18.7, now it's iOS 26. Apple Intelligence is on by default. It's scanning all the applications on the devices by default. All those toggle switches are on. So if you're having a Signal or Session or Threema conversation, Briar conversation with your friends or family, and they're running the latest version of iOS, you're going to want to make sure that those toggle switches are off on their phone, because otherwise your end-to-end encrypted conversations, yeah, they're being indexed by their phone's AI, essentially doing device scanning of all of those conversations, the content, the images, because yes, it's end-to-end encrypted, but when it's on the phone and something you give access to it on the phone, it's kind of negates the whole point of having end-to-end encryption to a degree. If the carrier, the big, you know, tech oligarchs are just scanning it by default now. So I feel like there's a lot of people hitting different like thresholds. This is the line in the sand, whether it's with their operating system or their phone or using cloud services or streaming services. Streaming is a big one for me too. I have been, over the last year and a half, ripping all of my CDs. I went into the attic in my parents' house and got a bunch of CDs of mine, my brother's. A friend of mine actually had a couple hundred of his CDs up there. And I am ripping everything I can get my hands on in uncompressed FLAC. And I actually have a Jellyfin server, and I also have a Plex server running. The Plex server has actually worked out kind of well in that regard, because the Plex Amp app, and I know it's not open source, but it is self-hosted, but I know it's not, it's, but it's, in my eyes, still my data. At least I get to control the data. Using the Plex Amp app on my Pixel, and then I also got a Fios DAC for like $50, and I got these really nice open back headphones, and I'm just really re-enjoying music all over again. When I get overwhelmed, I'll just sit down and I'll pick an album. I also bought a record player, and I'm buying vinyl again. I'm kind of wanting to get back to this analog state of connecting with media. And also, when I'm watching or consuming content like on TV or listening to music. I'm trying to do it on in a way where I'm not being distracted by anything else. So I can really just kind of take the time to enjoy it. So when I sit down and I put on the Fleetwood Mac Rumors album and I'm listening to it on my open back headphones and they're wired headphones using a DAC, which is a digital to analog adapter controller, I think, digital to analog controller. It converts it back to analog. I'm like listening to my own uncompressed audio from my server downstairs. I'm like, man, this is awesome. This is really cool. I just like it a lot. I've actually installed some other apps like Fluxbox. I was at Fluxbox on the phone to just build without having to use Plex, because I don't really, not a huge fan of Plex, but the Plex Amp app works great for when I'm not on the home network. All to say is trying to still enjoy the things that I enjoy, but in a more sovereign way where I'm in control of the data, I'm in control of the media. There's not a big tech company trying to spy on me to try to sell me more ads or put ads in front of me using the traditional normie phone route like Android or iPhone, and it, you know, throwing me into an algorithm because I'm using one of their streaming services. Like, I mean, those are things are convenient, but I'm kind of just done with it. And so I'm pushing myself to be more mindful and purposeful about what I spend my time doing and how I'm consuming that, what I'm filling it with, whether I'm watching online videos or news or streaming social media or whatever, is to be much more purposeful and also setting some like limits. And I would say I'm getting better. I'm not great. I'm much better because I'm aware. I'm trying to be more aware. And I'm also trying to be more aware of the technology that I'm opting into and what I'm paying for. And this is really kind of like what's been pushing me to be like, okay, at some point there's like a event horizon, a point of no return where I would say, okay, that's it. I'm done with Apple forever, or Google forever. You know, like, you know, there's that point's different for everybody. And I don't want to get to that point. I want to depart. I want to exit off this interstate, this freeway of chaos before I hit the wall at the end, which is the papers, please, digital ID on your phone, you know, KYC, all your apps. Like, no. I want to opt out long before this happens. It's kind of like the one friend that we all have, or maybe you are that person, you know, that's like, I've never had a Facebook account or I've never had an Instagram account, you know. It's kind of like, wow, that's cool. Cause like I definitely have had both. Sure. You know, for sure. And to be able to say, yeah, I've never actually had AI on my phone. I've never had digital ID on my phone. I don't even have a way to do that. I don't have a device like that, because we're slowly being conditioned. Just in my travels last week, I went to a few different restaurants in a pretty big city, and half of them don't even accept cash. They actually say right outside, you know, digital payments only. It's tap to pay, or, you know, Apple Wallet or Google Wallet or whatever, Samsung Pay or whatever, or the tap to pay. And I feel like that was really accelerated with COVID to condition us like, oh, well, pay, like money is gross and carries germs, so we're just not going to use that anymore. Like, what? I love paying for stuff with cash. I love not leaving that digital, you know, yeah, it might be a coffee or something, but it's just like, hey, the more I cannot have my digital footprint expanded, the better it is for me in the long run. And this also goes for your technology, your devices, and also your operating systems on your computers and, you know, your ISP scanning you. So like the use of VPNs or Tor and running your own DNS, encrypted DNS, or running your own ad blocker like AdGuard or Pi-hole or anything else. You know, it's like putting these things in place, it doesn't make you invisible. It doesn't make you 100% anonymous. And that's what I don't think most of us are going. I mean, that would be ideal, sure. But really, more than anything else, it's just limiting the amount of information that's getting leaked out and stored about you, or obfuscating, or intentionally poisoning that well of data. using alternate identities and pseudo accounts and, you know, aliased emails and privacy payments through like Cloaked or MySudo or privacy.com or different things. At least in the US, you have some options. I know in other parts of the world, it's harder to do that. I completely understand. It's harder to have non-KYC'd SIM cards in other parts of the world. You know, I get that. Though I'm pretty sure if you really wanted to, depending upon where you were, pretty much anybody could register with SilentLink and pay with Bitcoin or Monero for an eSIM and have a phone that is not KYC'd to at least receive calls, send and make texts, and use data. So that's something to consider. But, you know, it's more about like, I've kind of had this opportunity over the last couple months, especially with traveling, going, well, what do I need the most and what do I kind of rely on? What could I keep in Faraday bags when I travel? And, you know, how can I just limit my exposure? I'm not trying to be invisible. That would be ideal, but I know that's not really possible if you're carrying digital devices with you. I don't care who you are and what you've got set up. But more about just not making it easy, right? Not giving up anything without a fight. And that's what I'm seeing with a lot of these proposed legislations is that is more expansion of the normalization of it's about the children, it's about the kids, it's about catching the dares and all this other stuff, this bull crap, right? So we need to scan your face at the airport. We need to, you know, you need to have your real ID. And next is digital ID on the phone. And the digital ID will likely be a vector for age verification at some point down the road. That's at least what I'm kind of predicting is I see this push for digital ID on the phone to then be able to owe off, you know, a social media account or TikTok or whatever the hell you want to download and install to set up, hell, even YouTube to prove that you're over 18, right? But it's like it's doing – there's more trail there than that. There's more going on. And – now your transactions, your interactions on those social media accounts and platforms are tied to a real world ID. And how that can be used, let's say you're in the UK and you say something that's calling a politician a clown, is it could get you arrested. You know, it could literally get you arrested. And it's not even talking about hate speech. We're not talking about threats. We're talking about freedom of speech. Maybe speech that somebody doesn't like, but it's not incendiary. It's not a threat. You're just speaking your mind. And I don't want to see the stifling of honest, open conversations happening because people are afraid to be critical of a government or a corporation, an entity that has the means, the technology, and the pocketbook to go after things they don't want to hear, whether it's someone criticizing them, criticizing a board, criticizing, you know, their motivations. Maybe it's whistleblowing on bad business practices, exposing the truth and the reality. For instance, I find it very interesting. A few years ago, before AI was really kind of like the talk of the town, Google and Apple both really touted that they were going to be like carbon neutral by this date and really pushed all this propaganda on being, you know, socially responsible for their carbon footprint, green energy and this and that and the other. And now all of a sudden, the largest data centers like ever seen by a human being are being built all over the place just for AI. Billions of dollars, millions of gallons of water, tons of power demand. No one's talking about carbon footprint anymore. Greta Thunberg definitely isn't getting the airtime she was once getting speaking out against, you know, climate change and these different things. And I think it's because, well, that narrative doesn't really fit anymore. Because Google and NVIDIA and Meta, you know, Microsoft with OpenAI are just like, yeah, well, we can't really do that because we got to build AI. So, yeah, we're not going to talk about carbon footprints anymore. goes against making money. And I think it's a big, I think they're just setting money on fire, to be honest. I think there's probably a race to the bottom. AI sucks. Even the generative stuff is trash. It just totally sucks. Yes, is it cool to take a photo of something and circle it and it do a, all it's doing is a reverse Google image search. It's not AI. I mean, we've had machine learning for a very long time, but don't be duped by all this marketing jargon, because that's what it is. And really what it is it's selling you a new shiny surveillance tool that is only benefiting them. And when I say them, is because this data is sold. It's the new oil, right? Like, the language models have already scoured everything there is online, every video, every book, every website. It's already indexed all that. So moving forward, the only real new valuable data to collect is ones that they're asking us to input in as prompts and voice search. And, you know, okay, assistant, what is this? Or what restaurant is within 5 miles of me that serves Italian? Oh, well, now we know you like Italian food, and now we know where you're located, and all these we have all these data points on you. Now, to you, it's a convenience because we can aggregate a quick little directory listing of based on ratings and reviews of the top, you know, three Italian restaurants, because that's what you're asking for. But really, what do they get out of it? They get everything. They get accelerometer data. They get movement GPS data. They get all the cross-site stuff, especially when you're running multiple apps owned by the same entity. Like, we can talk about Meta, Uber and DoorDash and all these different, you know, entities. When you're traveling, you know, when you get those instant coupons to stop because they know where you are, right? It's just basically a big, like, sales machine, really. But also, this data can be purchased. And you're not benefiting from that at all. The only thing you actually benefit from is the convenience. And the reality is, you could actually just pull it up yourself without actually using that assistant. And the trade-off is, you know, better for them than it is for you. So I guess it's just the hype machine of all of this is something that I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't understand why this is such a big deal, because it's all pretty crappy. It doesn't really work that well. And I know I've experimented with it. I work in the marketing space, and this is something that I'm very well versed in and understand. And I also run my own LLMs locally. And, you know, there's some benefit to running them locally. There's some value. I think they're cool. They can definitely be helpful, but they're not solving the world's problems. They're creating new problems, and no one really knows what the future's going to look like with what they're doing with all these patterns and all this massive amounts of data. So on the topic of that, I just wanted to touch base on, in the U.S., there's new proposed act called the U.S. Federal Screen Act. And it's kind of crazy what Screen Act stands for. It's short for Shielding Children's Retinas from Egregious Exposure on the Net Act. Who says on the net anymore? What is this? What is this? Like 1999? So what the hell is that? It's a federal legislation introduced to require adult websites to implement robust age verification technologies aimed at protecting minors from exposure to pornographic content. Okay. And this is Senate Bill S-737, introduced in the 119th Congress on February 26, 2025, by Senator Miller Lee, Republican of Utah. And it was referred to the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. That's what he sits on. And the key partners in this effort include another senator of Utah, John Curtis, Republican, and Jim Banks, a Republican in Indiana. And as co-sponsors, and a companion bill in the House by Representative Mary Miller, a Republican out of Illinois. Interesting. Thought that was the party of small government, but it seems that they have flip-flopped on that ideal. So we have four Republicans who are pushing for this legislation. Now, it is just proposed. It's not necessarily law or anything like that, but definitely has a decent amount of support and might get some traction. So in the current or proposed legislations, and this data is I compiled about 2 months ago, so it's might be a little stale, but in the U.S. we have the Kids Online Safety Act, which is COSA, and that's federal bill S-1748, introduced in May 14th of 2025, and that requires online platforms to implement safeguards for users under 17. In the United States, we also have what's called the Earn It Act, and this is a proposed legislation introduced in 2023 that's still out there. And this is basically to amend Section 230 and possibly weaken encryption by increasing platform liability for child sexual exploitation. And then in Canada, we've got the Protecting Young Persons from Exposure to Pornography Act, Bill S-209. And that was reintroduced just a few months ago in May. And that bill aims to criminalize allowing users under 18 to access sexually explicit material unless age verification is used. And then in the European Union, we have the Chat Control Initiative. That one is actually coming up to vote on in just a couple weeks. So today's September 29th, 2025. That's coming up to vote on October 14th. So I will get some information out once we have that and be updating my matrix of all this stuff going on, like a quick summary table I basically put in the show notes, and we'll have it on the forum. So I'll try to keep that updated as these things change from and their status, basically. And then we also have the Digital Fairness Act in the EU, which is proposed EU law targeting dark pattern personalization, misleading influencer marketing. I don't know. That's open for public consultation since July, with formal proposals expected later this year in Q3. Actually, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Q3 of 2026. Then Australia, you have the Digital Duty of Care, which is a legislative proposal requiring social platforms to actively prevent online harms, especially to minors. I love how they say especially to minors. I mean, how about especially to anyone, I guess, if you're going to go all the way. Drawing inspiration from the UK-EU frameworks announced in 2025. And then also in Australia, we have a social media age ban for under 16. So this is, you know, legislation passed aiming to ban children under the age of 16 from platforms like TikTok, Instagram, so on and so forth, with enforcement expected by the end of next year. Meaning there will probably be criminal liability at the end of next year for those that don't have those controls in place. And there's a lot of like question marks on this stuff that I'll talk about in just a second. And then also Sri Lanka has the Online Safety Act number 9 of 2024. It passed in January of 2024. And this law has established a government online safety commission to regulate prohibited statements, in air quotes, with penalties for platforms and individuals. What is a prohibited statement? And where is the list of the prohibited statements that people can go and look at and make sure they don't say them? Or are they just arbitrarily decided upon in real time by AI or an algorithm? We don't freaking know. But, you know, these are real world laws in countries that are developed that are basically putting the screws to freedom of speech and freedom of expression. All in the name of trying to save children, right? And this is through ways of age verification, prohibiting different kinds of speech. We're seeing this in the UK. People are getting arrested for just literally posting, criticizing, you know, parliament members online on Twitter, and they're like getting arrested for it. Not even threats. Not like, oh, I'm going to kill this person. Like, no, just calling him a clown and getting arrested for it. If you don't have an outlet to talk and criticize and have discussion, then you literally are. I mean, you are basically reconditioning the way you think, the way you talk, the way you dream. And it is not just chat control, it's mind control. And so all these different things I talk about in like the digital side are ways to keep the scanners and the surveillance out of your personal life, and keeping your files and things secure in your purview, and what was once looked at as convenient could be the very thing that is the threat to humanity, to your sanity in life. And so following these, staying up to date on these is really important to understand, because it seems like a lot of countries kind of mimic, oh, well, this worked over here, let's try it here. We already saw the UK won against Apple, and Apple's had to roll back advanced data protection capabilities for end-to-end encrypting their UK citizens' iCloud content. So they're going to be less protected. They're going to be more vulnerable because of these laws, where even someone like Apple, who actually has an option to have end-to-end encrypted for everything except email and contacts within your iCloud accounts. So this is all your files, these are your photos, your iMessages, including your iCloud backups, are also all end-to-end encrypted with advanced data protection enabled, allegedly, that will be disabled, that will no longer be available to UK citizens. That's not good for any of those people. So if you're in the UK, you know, you're probably paying attention to this going like, oh shit, well, what do I do? Well, host your own cloud. I mean, even if you just bought Synology, it'd be better than using stuff that you know the government's like basically actively looking for, and they're arresting people for tweets. So I would say this is a high on the priority list that people should be looking at, to, you know, self-host your data, your storage, your files, to use end-to-end encrypted, you know, chat tools, to use VPNs, to use Tor, because they're looking for people that are saying negative things. And that may be coming to a country near you, right? Could be coming here to the US, could be coming to North America and Canada, as well as other parts of the world that are considered westernized, and especially European Union states. So this matters to all of us. We should all be looking at this and caring about this. And I certainly do. And this is definitely continues to motivate me to say, what can I do to keep ensuring that I have as much as I can, or within reason, control over who I'm talking to, what I'm saying, and where I'm storing my information, my photos, my files, and that kind of stuff, without it being looked up, peaked, and scanned, indexed, and algorithmed with every save, right? That's really all it is. So anyways, there's a lot going on there, and I'm following that. There's some stuff going on with GrapheneOS and RCS support that hopefully we get rectified in the next week. And I know a lot of you may be like, ah, that's okay, I don't care about RCS, and that's cool. And a lot of people wouldn't even want to use Google Messages. I get that. But living in a day and age where it's expected to have rich communication services or high fidelity, you know, content being able to be shared, especially within a work or professional environment, it is kind of a necessity for some of those use cases, not every use case, right? The default GrapheneOS SMS application is perfectly suitable for a lot of people, but it is not encrypted. And if you're having those communications, you're probably having them with Signal. And Signal is not necessarily appropriate in a professional work environment to say, tell 18 people between vendors, clients, employees, say, oh, my phone is not capable to do that, so I need you guys to download Signal. Again, that's more of a me problem that I'm trying to resolve. So I'm trying to navigate on the desktop and on the phone and the professional side, as well as on the personal side. And I know a lot of you probably are doing similar things, right? You might have two phones, a work phone, personal, whatever. And, you know, you're trying to make sure that you don't cross streams, so to speak, with a lot of this. And, you know, it's never perfect, right? It's never perfect, but it's just trying to each day, each week, each month, just get a little bit better, get a bit little closer to where ultimately you want to be in your utopia of your digital setup, if you will. A couple things I wanted to talk about, applications that I've found that have been really helpful, that might be helpful for you, is on Android, Catima, Catima. It's on Izzy Android, F-Droid, Google Play. You can also install it via GitHub using like Obtainium or any other repo manager you'd use. It's a great open source application, privacy respecting, and basically it's multilingual, supports 40 languages. And it's basically a barcode. It supports 10 different barcodes that you can scan, like membership cards, like Sam's Club, Costco, I don't know, whatever big box stores you go to, you get the membership card. You can actually store these on your phone. safely, privacy respecting, and easily share those cards with users. If they don't have Katima installed, you can actually share them. But there's no ads, there's no tracking, it's open source. And it's cool. It's a cool little app. I thought you guys might like it. Also, SecureCopy, SCRCPY, is on GitHub, and it can mimic your Android device on your computer. Pretty baller. SCRCPY. And then also another cool inventory app that I found very useful when upgrading from one Pixel to the other with Graphene OS, keeping track of all the applications I had installed, especially because you might have different, like, you can probably install your apps into your main owner profile, then disable those apps, then go into your user profile apps, and then using assigning a subset of those applications installed into each user profile based on the context. So if it's like work, personal, social media, throwaway, whatever, you can use this app called App List, and basically just exports an inventory of all the applications you have installed. So if you're trying to set up another new Pixel or something, you can use that as kind of like your control. Like, okay, these are all the apps I need to have on this phone as well, right? Like for me, I have a whole workflow for setting up a new Pixel for myself, right? I literally have a list of these apps and I go in and I install them. Most of them are from either F-Droid or Obtainium. There are some from Google Play Store, and then those go into a specific user profile. And then I install like DavX from F-Droid, which I use as a connector to my Nextcloud instance, which synchronizes my contacts, my file backups and all that kind of stuff. My photos. I have also used NT Photos as a safeguard. End-to-end encrypted, all my photos are backed up, which is great because it's also on all my phones. If I take a photo on phone A, on phone B, it'll show up, right? Because they're all synchronized with NT. So my next setup is I'd like to also synchronize those to an image server, IMMICH. So that would be running on the same system as my Nextcloud server as well. So trying some different setups, different workflows, different OS with Omarchi, working through some of these issues that a lot of us are probably experiencing on Graphene OS with RCS, and trying to keep a pulse on what this crazy world's going through right now, both politically, both on the digital side, AI, and all this stuff too. It's a lot to manage without getting depressed, isn't it? So if that's how you feel, you're definitely not alone, and definitely come join in the conversations in the chat room. Connect with me on social media. Like, I am on X, but I'm also on Mastodon and Noster. To me, those are more sovereign, and especially considering I'm only on my own instance of Mastodon, which is running on a server in my house, in my basement. So gonna need a warrant for that. So Noster, Mastodon, X, Matrix. We also have Signal and Simple X. I'm gonna try to be a little more active in those as I'm gonna be home for a little while, at least hopefully through October, and also re-up on my publishing schedule as well. So thank you all for sticking around. Thank you for listening to me ramble about my insanity with the world and technology and being part of this community, because really that's it. I do have some support and I really appreciate it. But I do have a full-time job. I have a family and I travel a good deal for work. And so I'm really trying to find a healthy balance, but I do also want to make sure I'm giving enough value back to make that ask actually feasible. So that's on me, and we'll be working to try to continue that that trend of more higher frequency of posting. Getting this infrastructure over moved to Ghost, I think, will help a lot, and also having that email marketing working through Ghost, because I think we have a couple hundred people signed up on the mailing list. I've never actually sent a single email. I've never even talked about it. That's funny. I think it's just in the footer of the website. And a lot of people have joined. I love looking at the mailing list and seeing just nothing but like simple login addresses. It's awesome. I know for sure that these are email aliases, and I know for sure everyone that's used one is going, all right, Simon, I'll give you my email address, but if I ever end up on a list, I'll know it came from you. And you're 100% right. I would never do that. I would never get that list out of my site. So plan on doing some email marketing, especially on things that are like kind of more breaking, where I can't get an episode out, but I can send a communication out on email that's like, hey, you know, this passed, you know, or this new application's out, or this is where we're at with Graphene OS. Sometimes just having like quick email blasts that are just pertinent to specific things, or maybe just a few different topics, I think could be very helpful. I love getting Josh's emails from Side of Burritos. He does all the Graphene OS tutorials on YouTube, and I'm on his mailing list, and it's just so cool. Like, some of the information in there, I'm like, dude, this is awesome. And he has like cool random stuff in there, like website of the day and stuff like that. It's just neat. It's just neat. And it's a medium that I think is underrated. And so I would like to utilize that as well. I think I'm going to enlist some help to do that as well, so I can stay consistent with it. Because I think, I think it could be helpful. So anyways, I'll quit rambling and say, I hope you're doing well. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sticking with me. If there's anything particular you'd like me to talk about, shoot me an email, simon@closednetwork.io. I am planning to get some guests back on the show over the next month or two. So that'll be fun, because it'll be more than just me blabbing in my microphone. So until then, I will catch you all on the flip side. Later. They can never keep me down. I'm going. And if I ever fail, just know I'll go again. I never quit, because I know that every loss may lead to another win. I'm going up. I bet when I land, they're going to tell me it's luck again. See that I'm winning, it's harder to watch. I'm setting the stage. You should give me my prize. You ain't got a soul. You lacking the spirit. You talk out your neck. I'm going to show you I'm with it. I've been really happy for you to sit and watch me win again and win again and win again. I know.